Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. We are back in session following an executive session to discuss potential litigation and a closed session to discuss labor negotiations. Councilmember Marchioni will not be able to participate in the balance of tonight's meeting, although she did participate by telephone in our executive session and closed session. Is there a motion to excuse Councilmember Marchioni?
So moved.
Thank you. Moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Sweet. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, say no. Thank you very much. Ms. Marchioni's absence is excused. If we could have the roll now for the regular meeting, Ms. Anderson.
Councilmember Nixon?
Here.
Councilmember Kloba?
Here.
Councilmember Asher?
Here.
Councilmember Sweet?
Here.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Here.
Mayor Wallen?
Here. Thank you very much. The first item on our agenda is a very important one. It's a proclamation reaffirming and emphasizing the partnership between our community and the City of Kirkland and the Kirkland Police Department. City Manager.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Mayor, members of the Council. So this will take a little bit of explanation. Some exciting things are happening downstairs that are going to impact this proclamation as well. So as you all know, with the recent tragic shootings we've had, both of African-American men and police officers over the last few weeks, the mayor asked that a proclamation be drafted that emphasizes the importance of the relationship between the police department and the community. And this relationship was especially highlighted during a recent police chief hiring process. And during that process, we actually assembled a group of community leaders who were part of the interview process. And they very much emphasized that need to always get better and improve that relationship, even though it's pretty good here in Kirkland. And so one of the things we did is we invited as many of those folks as who could make it back from that panel here tonight to help receive the proclamation, along with our new police chief, Sherry Harris. Sherry is actually downstairs at the same time we asked for a meeting between the Norkirk and Market communities and the police to talk about some recent break-ins and issues. And we have a very excited, engaged, overflow crowd of over 100 people downstairs. So while they're having that conversation, I think the chief is having that conversation, may not quite make it up in time for this proclamation. But so what we wanted to have happen, and we also invited some other community leaders as well, is that when the proclamation is read, we're going to ask that all of the people who are invited to come forward, as well as the police who were here to witness the proclamation as well. And I think, Mayor, you're going to have the council join you. And we're going to try to find space over in the area by Councilmember Nixon. And if we need to move the chairs a little bit to assemble everybody, I think it's an important way to show we come together as a community in general, and we're certainly coming together as a community tonight over this important issue. So that's how we hope to have this happen. And finally, we have the chaplain of the police and fire department is here, and when the proclamation is finished, he's going to honor us with a prayer about unity and community. So,
thank you very much.
That, Madam Mayor?
That's it. Thank you, sir.
Coming a little bit more this way, we were hoping a little bit more this way.
It's a work in progress.
Here, I'll go on this side.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Thank you. I'm Mr. Nixon. How are you doing, sir?
Okay.
Else beside it.
Good into wide angle lens.
I hope it's real wide. How are you doing?
Amy.
Magic.
A proclamation of the City of Kirkland proclaiming the City's commitment to sustain and enhance the partnership between the community and the Police Department in Kirkland, Washington. Whereas the recent tragic shooting deaths of African-American men in Baton Rouge, Louisiana and Falcon Heights, Minnesota, and police officers in Dallas, Texas and Baton Rouge, Louisiana are heartbreaking reminders that there's no more important relationship in the community than the one between a police department and those residents those officers protect and serve. And whereas the Kirkland Police Department has a long and proud tradition of a strong partnership with the Kirkland community, and that relationship was affirmed this week by the outpouring of support received by the police department after the shootings in Dallas. And whereas the police department earns this support and continually strengthens its efforts to be worthy of the trust and respect of all residents, regardless of age, race, and religion. And whereas this commitment starts in the hiring process and is reinforced through the training that educates officers on the importance of community policing and understanding and overcoming bias. And whereas a community panel consisting of leaders from neighborhoods, business, nonprofits, and religious institutions, during the recent police chief hiring process made it clear that there is always work to be done, and there's always a need to continually review and improve so that members of the Kirkland community feel safe and protected by the department. And whereas members of the community panel and other community leaders are here today to receive the proclamation and affirm their support for the police and urge that the department never take for granted the special position of trust that the community invests in the police and always strive to improve safety and service to all members of Kirkland's diverse and inclusive community. And whereas another important connection between the police department and the community are the National Night Out Against Crime events on August 2nd, 2016, promoting police community partnerships and neighborhood camaraderie for safety and awareness of the community of Kirkland. And Kirkland welcomes participation from every neighborhood in this important community event. Now, therefore, Amy Wallen, Mayor of Kirkland, does hereby proclaim the city's commitment to take actions necessary to show that every person is essential and must feel safe, and that members of our community and the police department must work together with respect and compassion to sustain and enhance the partnership between the community and the police department now and into the future. Signed this July 19th, 2016, Mayor Amy Wallen.
So just a couple things. I'm very sorry the PK room is full tonight, also of concerned citizens who just were thanking everyone as well for their service and had some questions about property crime. And so it is ongoing every day. But thank you very much for being here tonight. And thank you. It is not common in every community that the police department has the political support that we do. And so I can't thank our city council enough for doing a proclamation tonight. And we appreciate you very much. And as you heard, we are also committed to ensuring that we treat people with respect and that we have good relationships with our community. So thank you.
Lord Vince.
I'm going to close with the chaplain.
If you'd like to, I'd like to invite you to join us in a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, we thank you, Lord, for the purpose that we're gathering here tonight, and that is to come together as a community, to care for one another, to acknowledge one another. Father, we thank you for our city government. And we ask, God, that you continue to provide them with wisdom and understanding. And Father, we thank you for those who are serving in our police department. We pray for them tonight, Lord, those who are on patrol. We pray for their families. We ask, God, that you would watch over and protect. And Father, we ask that you would watch over and protect our community, our city. Lord, as has been said, you have blessed us with an unusual amount of cooperation and understanding and the ability to have grace in each other's sight. And we ask that you would just continue to do that work among us, Lord. To hear each other, to see each other, and to regard one another. Father, do that work in us, Lord, to knit our hearts together, our community together. And Lord, we ask for your blessing to be over our families, all of our families. And so, Father, we ask these things in your precious name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
Thank you. That was Vince Armfield, Kirkland's Police and Fire Chaplain. I would like to thank folks attending here, and we've got proclamations for everyone. Cheryl Haskins from City Church. B. Neon, former chair of the Kirkland Alliance of Neighborhoods. Lauren Thomas, CEO of HopeLink. James Whitfield, president and CEO of Leadership Eastside. Amy Morrison Goings, president of the Lake Washington Institute of Technology. Rick Thomas, of our senior counsel. Scott Becker, president of the Kirkland Chamber of Commerce. And Eric Liberty, our planning commissioner, were invited this evening. Thank you.
Back to business. Thank you very much for coming out this evening.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's a special moment that we took together, and I'm glad we did so. So thank you, everyone. The next item on our agenda is under communications. It's item 6B, items from the audience. This is the time in our meeting when we hear from the public on matters which are not quasi-judicial or otherwise scheduled for public hearing. Under item 11A, the council will have before it, thank you, ordinance 4526 in its summary relating to land use, approving a preliminary and final planned unit development applied for by Kraft Architecture on behalf of Astronics Corporation. Public comment will not be accepted on this matter. On other subjects, please limit your comments to 3 minutes. We also ask that not more than 3 people speak on any one subject. However, if both proponents and opponents wish to speak, then up to 3 proponents and up to 3 opponents may address the council. So we do have a sign-in sheet, and only one person has signed in to speak with us tonight. It is Dana Nanali. Good evening, Dana.
Hi, I'm Dana Nanali. And I've been a part of the Kirkland Cultural Arts Commission for the last 5 years, and it's been my pleasure. The Kirkland Cultural Arts Commission is a volunteer board that works to help arts, culture, heritage grow and thrive in the city of Kirkland. Along with supporting art and cultural initiatives, the commission advises the city council on art acquisition and promotes strategic arts planning in Kirkland. And I have several commission members here with me. Would you guys please stand? So. So we wanted you to know that there are 2 very important items before you tonight from the commission. And both are related to the Cross Kirkland Corridor. The first is the Cross Kirkland Corridor Art Integration Plan, and we're very pleased to be able to bring that to you because we've spent nearly 2 years strategizing on how best to embrace and encourage art while also ensuring a high caliber of art and preserving the beauty and the nature of the corridor. And there's been a lot of energy and a lot of consideration from many stakeholders across the community to go into this, and I think you'll be very pleased with what you see. The second is our recommendation for the very first art project on the corridor. And we're very pleased that to let you know that we've chosen an ephemeral artist whose project will involve community interaction. And it's a very congruent and a very natural way that will work really well with the corridor. So we feel it's a perfect way to kick off some of the creative energy that the corridor is going to be consumed with, and we're excited to share that with you. And finally, we'd like to thank you very much for your support for art and our community. Art is one of the things that makes Kirkland the livable city that it is, and it's one of the hallmarks that makes me proud to be a resident here for over 30 years. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your comments. We appreciate you being here. I've reached the end of the sign-in sheet, but I understand that Sergeant Nate Rich wishes to address the council. Good evening, Mr. Rich. Please come forward.
Nate.
You're up, sir. Welcome.
So my name is Nathan Rich, and I'm the guild president for the Kirkland Police Officers Guild. And tonight I'm here to talk to you specifically about Ordinance 4527. And I'd like to give you a little bit of background on where that's coming from. So the Kirkland Police Department has been in a little bit of a staffing crunch. We've been struggling with staffing. We're down several bodies, and we're trying to hire to replace them. A new police officer coming in through the department is going to go through the six-month academy, then training, and then if they make it that far, eventually we'll see them on the road within about a year. So about 11 and a half months to a year is standard for a new police officer to get online. We are, as I talked about, we're currently talking and we're trying to recruit as heavily as we can. And the department is now, Chief Harris in particular, has inherited a bit of a problem. The problem was is that we weren't forecasting and looking ahead far enough. We've had numerous retirements, and now we're at a spot where we're in a crunch. We're trying to now scramble to fix that, and we've been doing a fairly good job. Lieutenant Murray's been innovative in some of his recruiting. We're doing a lot of different things to try to gain new police officers. As you may have noticed, being a police officer is not the most popular of professions right now. I do appreciate the council's support, city manager's support, and HR and everybody else that's been there for me. They've done a phenomenal job of making sure that we felt supported, and I want to truly say thank you for that. My kid brother works in a different police department, and he's not benefiting of the support of his community, so I appreciate it, and I don't take it for granted. My issue is that I've never seen lowering standards in anything as a good way of doing business. I've never seen lowering an education requirement for a lateral police officer as a fix to a problem. I don't think we should get away with physical fitness standards. I don't think we should lower education standards. I think we need to keep our bar high because that's the caliber of police officer the city of Kirkland demands and needs. Now, I personally live in the city of Kirkland. I live up on Finn Hill. And as a resident, I would expect the department and the city to find the best quality candidates they can. Now, I don't know if that's a signing bonus for laterals who bring in new skill sets or things that we need, but a business would treat things a little bit differently than we have as an organization. I think this is the issue before us, and I would ask that you keep that in mind when you're voting tonight. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rich. The next person to have signed in is Chris Fox. Excuse me.
Good evening. It's a pleasure to be here tonight, and I didn't entirely expect to be here, but I'm speaking both as a citizen, but principally as the chairperson of the Civil Service Commission. I'm speaking also with regard to the resolution that is going to be proposed to change the ordinance that affects the Civil Service Commission. We have not had a meeting specifically about this ordinance. We learned that it was going to be proposed. It first came to us, not for our input, but just by way of notification last Tuesday. On Thursday, we learned it was going to be presented to you. We have been trying to have a special meeting. We have not been able to meet the requirements for the notice to prior to those meetings, so we do not have a position specifically on this ordinance. The commission would like to have input, would like to be part of the drafting, especially as it affects our commission and the authority that we have. And we would urge, I would urge and encourage the council to give the commission an opportunity to be part of the whatever kind of ordinance is going to be presented to you. We have not taken a position substantively, nor have we been asked to take a position substantively on as an agenda item. Last October, it came to us under the then acting chief, Hamilton. We had been waiting for it potentially to come to us as a substantive matter. It has not. So I can't tell you if that would actually occur or how we might rule upon it or decide upon it or the procedure to take upon it. But with regard to the ordinance that is before you tonight, I would ask that the commission be allowed to at least meet to give our input in a formal, official way and allow you to take that into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. So we've reached the end of the sign-in sheet. Is there anyone else who wishes to address the council at this time? Seeing none, I'll declare this item from the audience period closed. The next item on our agenda is under item 7. It's a special presentation on the Innovation Triangle Report. City Manager.
Okay. Good evening, Council. My name is Ellen Miller-Wolf. I'm your Economic Development Manager, and I have been for 10 years. Very exciting for me. So thank you for this opportunity to speak to you about the Innovation Triangle. The Innovation Triangle is a partnership. Oh, we're having trouble getting this slide up on the screen.
Council has the slides on their monitors.
Okay.
Yes.
Do you want to go forward with that?
Will the audience see ours?
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I can tell you a little bit about this first slide that you're looking at, and everyone can look at it soon enough. The Innovation Triangle is a partnership of the communities of Bellevue, Redmond, and Kirkland. For purposes of this presentation, I'll do a backwards, Kirkland, Redmond, Bellevue, what have you. It's basically the working, the ethic, the tenet of this is very close to the Three Musketeers that some of you are familiar with, and that's one for all and all for one. And the realization by these three cities that we can do better with, in this case, recruitment of technology companies if we work together. And also that if you work in Bellevue, more likely than not, you're going to be living in Kirkland or Redmond. You're going to be buying cars in one of those places and other groceries and other products. So for all sorts of reasons, it makes sense to be co-equals and participants in a recruitment effort. The focus, as I said, is on information and communication technology, on technology companies. The effort is to reach out to those companies, but at the same time to also reach inward and help those companies that are already here that want to expand or those entrepreneurs that have the best idea and want to realize it. So it's both an inward and outward-looking effort by the three cities. It's been about 3 years in the making, but there's been a true hurry-up in the last 6 months to get the partnership branded, and you're seeing the brand invent the future and the partnership and its goal of creativity and building the future is the destination. Also, wanted to say that we're not an area that has a lot of incentives for companies moving in to the region. So we really are counting on our talent and our current innovative companies to bring people into the region. And obviously, we are most importantly are some of the clusters within the tech world. that are prominent here, enterprise software being one, cloud computing, e-commerce, virtual reality, other interactive media, big data, and in even space exploration. SpaceX is a company that was born in a garage in Merrimore Park. So as I said, we're trying to invite technology in, but we're also trying to grow our own entrepreneurial-oriented businesses. I'm going to talk a little bit about the clusters and the companies that are here. I'm going to talk about the attributes of the Innovation Triangle, our adventures at the Select USA conference, where we were able to kind of meet and greet and woo a lot of technology companies from around the world, and some of our website, and then some of the next steps that we're planning to take. These are the most prominent information and communication technology companies, clusters, in the three cities that you know well. Business services, enterprise software, obviously Google, Microsoft, and iSoftStone, located here in Kirkland, a Chinese company, are some of the purveyors of those in those areas. Gaming and augmented reality. We are the home of Warner Brothers Games. We are soon to be, although it's unofficial, the home of Valve, one of the homes of Valve. Valve has headquarters R&D and sales in Bellevue. They started in Kirkland, and they will soon be assembling some of their virtual reality gadgetry in Kirkland. So there's some symbiosis, some connectivity among our communities in terms of making and selling and dreaming off. We're also the home of big data and some of the more well-known ones, Inrix, big data for your car, and Tableau, basically crunching big data for a lot of different uses and functions, and as I mentioned, commercial space. We, as I said, are basically the way of promoting ourselves is to talk about the talent and the revenue that is here. It's happening here. Come join this effort. One of the most amazing statistics that we found in looking at the three cities and is their economic output, $48 billion in 2013 of economic output by these three cities, Bellevue, Redmond, and Kirkland. And if we were to be a country, we would be the 88th largest economy in the world. Quite amazing. And then how we compare to some of the other regions that call themselves innovative regions, hubs of technology, you can see that our educational attainment towers above many of the others. Innovation areas, innovation hubs that we're aware of in this country. And similarly, our workforce is full of people that are part of the knowledge-based economy. So we compare very, very well with other regions. Our issues primarily, and the Boston Consulting Group has done some work on this, have to do with how do we make sure that our existing residents can be part of that workforce? How can people that are living here and kids in the schools take advantage of this burgeoning economy? Big issue for us. And similarly, hopefully that our infrastructure grows to accommodate the growth of this technology industry. Other things that would make us attractive to companies to want to be here, invest here. We have one of the best qualities of life in the country, natural beauty that we are graced with. But in addition to that, we have created some amazing places. Cross Kirkland Corridor is one of them, where we live and we work and we play. And we're also very concerned about having a work-life balance. Obviously, the city has its own health program here that's all about a work-life balance. Thank you, Jim Lopez. And the other attribute, education. What you see arrayed here are a number of the educational institutions that are training people for the tech workforce. And the newest one is GIX, which is a partnership of the University of Washington, a Chinese university, and Microsoft to train tomorrow's visionaries and tech trailblazers. And that is due to start with probably about a dozen a little bit more than a dozen students in the fall of 2016. And as many of you know, it will be located in the Spring District, but I think all of us in the three cities will benefit from this university and hopefully have an opportunity to participate in it. DigiPen, like Washington Institute of Technology, part work in the interactive media spaces, training people to build games both for work and for play. Obviously, the University of Washington, Bellevue College, and other institutions not named are very much involved in as the backbone for tech workers, and we in Kirkland have the Foster School that is training MBAs for IT management jobs. The other thing that distinguishes this area in terms of its attractiveness for tech is that it's equidistant from Europe and Asia, which are both key trading partners. 9 hours in each direction. Some of you may be aware of the Delta campaign that is all about the fact that we are easy to get to as compared with some of the other technology hubs in the country. We are global by our very nature. We are culturally diverse. This talks about 30% of our residents being from various corners of the world. What's most important is that we are welcoming, that we are tolerant, and that is something that attracts talent to our region. Our accomplishments, again, this has been pretty much a six-month ramp-up, so we're very early in the maturation of this project. But we have already been to a major a conference for bringing together economic development and innovative companies. We've developed a website. We have started to work on a startup space, 425, which will be a shared workplace in Bellevue. And we have put together a lot of pieces of marketing collateral as well. So the Select USA Summit, here we are proudly arrayed in front of our booth. This was a summit that brought together about 2,600 businesses, foreign direct investment concerns to Washington, D.C. It's a department of the Federal Department of Commerce that puts on the conference, and we are here. And there's myself and my partner, James Henderson, who represents the city of Bellevue, and Bart Phillips, who is the executive director of One Redmond. So those are the three partners. I have to say I'm at the helm of an amazing team here that's done a real pivot from just addressing small businesses, which has been a lot of Duncan's work, and doing a lot of tourism work, which is a lot of Philly's work, and a slight pivot to kind of take on this regional work, which is so important. So behind every woman is a team, and I want to congratulate them for all they did to get us ready for this conference. To get to about 20 interviews or speed dates with a number of businesses, we had to filter through about 200 or 300 businesses that were attending the conference. And a lot of that work was done by Duncan Malloy, and a lot of it was done by the Economic Development Council of Seattle King County, which was also our partner in this conference. On the basis of those interviews, we have sorted through, and 20 of those businesses are potential businesses that would land in our region within the three cities, and we are having further discussions with each of them. The other thing we did, as I mentioned, is we put up a website, and you're seeing some of the pages of the website, and of course our Google, Ferd and Park, and real estate that we have, our cultural areas, our real estate prominence. And then there are other parts of this site that can be downloadable, including some of the statistics that I showed you earlier, and obviously ways to contact us. We are in the process of populating this site. On the real estate, you see a bunch of co-working spaces. These we know are really important, and that's in part while we're trying to launch a co-working space in Bellevue as one of our common projects. That's one of the next steps that I'm showing here. 425 will be a co-working space that also has staffing by these three entities, One Redmond, the City of Bellevue, and ourselves, to be able to help entrepreneurs that are working out of that space get to financing, get to real estate, get to whatever they need. We're also going to be inviting back those 20-some prospects from Select USA to our area in October. And then finally, I just want to touch on very quickly, we are each of us working on coordinating on a Port of Seattle grant opportunity that is also on your agenda. I think it's item 11F. The port is offering $65,000 to cities of our population, requiring a 50% match. And we have come up with a number of projects that meet the port's criteria, that help the port with its business lines, business recruitment, downtown revitalization, maritime, are those things that we are, we think our proposal connects to in terms of the port's criteria. We are going to be asking for your support via resolution later in the evening for funding for the further work of the Innovation Triangle and also for the engineering work that is the next step in the expansion of Moorage in downtown, which is its own economic driver for the downtown area. So that to come. This is the budget for that grant project, and we can talk more about it at that later item. But it shows that a total of $97,500, $32,500 of that would be tour doc reserve money, and then $11,000 from the economic development program budget for the work of the innovation, further work of the Innovation Triangle. So that's all for me. If you have any questions, I'm happy to address them. Very exciting. Someone asked about, what about Seattle? Are you now competing with Seattle? And I think the other lesson from Select USA is that everybody knows about Seattle, but not a lot of people know where the Innovation Triangle is, where the East Side is. So part of this is not so much a competition, but augmenting what Seattle has already started in terms of attracting tech to this region. So thank you very much.
Comments or questions for Ellen? You have made a ton of progress on this since last year. Penny?
Just one. Everybody wasn't at the roundtable last week. We really had a great presentation, really highly energized group of people who really, I think this is really exciting. And I got to applaud the department's work and your leadership, Ellen.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
The next item on... Oh! Thank you, Ellen.
It's an applause for
tonight. The next item on our agenda... I don't think we're going to get applause for this one. The consent calendar. Before we have a motion, I'll call on Deputy Mayor Arnold for an audit of the accounts.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. We had payroll in the amount of $3,176,976.88. And bills in the amount of $3,524,989.02.
Thank you very much, Mr. Asher.
Madam Mayor, I'd move first and final reading of the consent calendar.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Sweet, to approve the consent calendar. Are there any comments, corrections, or discussion? Thank you very much. There is an ordinance, so I will ask Ms. Anderson to call the roll.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Klobuch?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Walling?
Yes. Thank you very much. The consent calendar is approved. The next item on our agenda is under unfinished business. It's 10A, the Kirkland Municipal Cemetery Update. City Manager.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Mayor. So, as you recall, earlier this year, we had some challenges that we learned about at our cemetery, Kirkland Municipal Cemetery, and we have been working diligently to understand what's going on there and make some improvements. And so while we don't have final recommendations for you, we thought it was an important time to check in and let you know what we've been doing to help remedy the problem. And so here to give you an overview and update is our Finance Director, Michael Olson.
Good evening.
Good evening, Mayor, Council members. I'm happy to provide a brief update on the cemetery. By way of background, the Kirkland Cemetery was founded in 1888. And city took over operations in 1909, so a long history. The operations are guided by the city administrative policy and the Kirkland Municipal Code. It is operated as a park of the city, and the operations are taken care of by the Parks Department, and the administration is taken care of by Finance and Administration. There are just shy of 7,000 lots, which includes burial plots, niches, which are places in the walls for urns, and urn plots. Most of the full burial plots are sold. We do have 70 names on the waiting list. In the first 6 months of 2016, six lots were purchased back, so they would be available for sale, and we've had 15 in the last 2.5 years. Now, there may be some burial plots that are available, but as part of our review, we're looking at all the records to making sure the records are clean before we make those available for sale. The current activity in the cemetery is primarily in our niches, in our ground plots, and Baby Haven. There are 925 lots for sale right now. Most of those are in the niche walls, about 625. 252 in ground plots, which is available for one urn only, and they put a marker on that, and then another 48 in Baby Haven. This is a map of the cemetery, and most of the available plots are near the entrance. The upper right corner here is the entrance to the entrance to the cemetery, and these walls here, 46 and 45, are the niche walls, and there's also a couple niche walls at the Flag Plaza, and then some in the middle here. And that's where right near the entrance, where most of them are available for sale. The ground plots are here, 48 and 47, and then Baby Haven. So this is where most of the recent activity has taken place. As noted in the staff report, the history has some lacking of records going back to 1888. No records in the first year, and a fire likely happened in the 1920s, which destroyed records. And so there's kind of a history of records. And as noted, there was a couple of issues in 2015 which caused us to look more closely to begin a review of the records. And at that time, we started a review of the available paper and electronic records. We also, at that time, updated our cemetery procedures and our forms to be more complete. And our cemetery committee meetings, which include the parks and finance directors, and the staff associated with the cemetery now meets on a quarterly basis, and we began the review and update of our policies as well. For the policy review, the city hired a part-time graduate intern who began looking at the WCI best practices and those of other municipal cemeteries to see that we would implement our best practices. And Lindsay, our half-time summer graduate intern, has reviewed the RCWs, the KMC, and the WCIA best practices, has interviewed Parks and Finance staff, has looked at other municipal cemeteries in the state of Washington, and is reviewing recommendations and preparing and presenting recommendations to the cemetery committee and also to the city attorney for completeness. The current status, the city did hire a temporary three-quarter-time staff person to do the records review. And as part of the records review, we are looking at the hard copy records that we have on file. The paper records are electronic records, which we keep in trim, and also photos. One of the things that we, the park staff, have done is take a photo of every cemetery plot. So what we're doing is lining up the photo of the plot with the marker with the paper records that we have, and make sure that the electronic records have been entered accurately into our system. What we have found, we began with the niche and the urn ground plots. We've done about 1,500 record reviews at this time. We have found a number of records, or errors, inconsistencies that are in those records, and I've listed a number of them, multiple records for the same plot, data entry errors so that our hard copy records don't match our electronic records. And we've begun the process of correcting all of those and making sure that everything lines up accurately. So a complete record. And then the photos actually match the ground plot. The photos of the marker matches all the data we have on file. Also, the work of the graduate intern, she has completed the interviews and documented her review, and she's making preliminary recommendations right now, or they're being developed. The next steps are to complete the review and records corrections for all of the plots that are available for sale. We want to make sure that those are all accurate before we, as we're selling, continuing to sell the plots, that we review the ground plot records for any sold and unoccupied plots to make sure that those are all correct as well. And then also, all of the cemetery plots are in our GIS system, so we're making sure that those maps and the GIS is correct with all of our records as well, that it all links together. And we expect to have recommendations for discussion with the council this fall.
Thank you very much.
I don't know if there's any questions.
Sounds like a lot of detailed work has been done. Thank you. Questions or comments for Mr. Olson? Ms. Sweet.
I just loved the historical piece at the very end. You know, how we keep as many records as we do now is, it's almost impossible to consider what it was like between the years of 1909 and...
The staff memo included the copy of 4 pages of a report that was done in 1983. That's actually 50 pages long. And I read through that. It was very interesting to see some of the history and some of the what occurred in the cemetery as far as celebrations and things that happened in the early years.
It is very interesting. Thank you, Mr. Olson. Thank you to you and your team for all your hard work.
Thank you.
The next item on our agenda is under new business. It's item 11A. This is the time for the council to consider Ordinance 4526 and its summary relating to land use, approving a preliminary and final planned unit development applied for by Kraft Architecture on behalf of Astronics Corporation in the Department of Planning and Building file number ZON1500875 and setting forth conditions of approval. Mr. Raymond will briefly outline the process.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. This is a closed record, quasi-judicial hearing based on the factual record developed for the hearing examiner. This means the council will not be receiving new evidence this evening. Here's the format the council has established for this hearing. The mayor will first invite a report from staff, and council members may ask questions at any time. Thereafter, the council may suspend its rules to take action and vote on the application tonight, or it may take this matter under advisement before taking action and voting on the application at the next or a following meeting. The applicant has the responsibility of convincing the city that it is entitled to the requested actions, but there has been no challenge to this application. When the council acts on the application, it may grant the application based on the hearing examiner's recommendation, modify and grant the application, or deny the application. If the council were to conclude that it cannot make a decision because the record compiled before the hearing examiner is incomplete or inadequate, it could remand the matter to the hearing examiner for supplementary findings and conclusions. It is the council's intention that this hearing be fair in both appearance and in fact, and that it be conducted impartially. With those intentions in mind, I would first like to ask the council members whether any member believes he or she has prejudged this matter, cannot remain impartial, or has an interest whereby he or she stands to gain or lose by a decision either way. Next, I would like to ask the council members whether any member has had any third-party communications with either proponents or opponents of this preliminary and final plan unit development application. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
I had conceptual discussions several years ago prior to any application being entered, and it won't affect my ability to judge on this particular application.
Thank you, Mr. Asher. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Thank you very much. We're ready to proceed with the hearing, and I'd first like to ask Mr. Barnes to make his report.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council. It's my pleasure to be in front of you this evening to bring the Astronics PUD application. First, I'd like to contextualize everything here. Astronics' current campus is located on the northeast corner of the city, sandwiched in between Redmond on the east and the East Side Rail Corridor on the west. And it's comprised, I've broken it down into 5 parcels to kind of make it easier to understand what's going on here. Parcels A, B, and C comprise the existing Astronics campus. And on parcel C, there is a Class B stream and a 2 small wetlands. And parcels D to the north of that and E are largely undeveloped and have a three 30,000 square foot type 3 wetlands. The applicant proposes to construct on that northern parcels D and E a three-story, 133,000 square foot office and manufacturing building with associated surface parking to the west, and then a six-story parking garage just to the north of that. And an access road will connect on the southern part of this slide the existing campus to this new proposed campus, making one holistic campus for Astronix. So the PUD request, the applicant is asking to provide off-site mitigation outside of the subject property's drainage basin for the purposes of filling three type 3 wetlands. And they have proposed to use the King County in fee in lieu mitigation reserves program in order to mitigate the impacts of filling those 30,000 square feet of on-site wetlands. So the approval criteria for a PUD, there's three decisional criteria. The PUD must meet the requirements of the Chapter 125. The applicant must provide public benefits, and the benefits must clearly outweigh the impacts of what the applicant is requesting. Staff also analyzed the wetland modification code in Chapter 90 in looking at this particular case, and did a deeper examination of the King County Mitigation Reserves Program to kind of understand what the city would be getting for the impacts of filling a wetland. And the SEPA determination was determination of non-significance based on utilizing the King County Mitigation Reserves for the impacts of filling the wetlands. So some of the attributes of the King County Mitigation Reserves Program are that it requires a mitigation ratio of 2-to-1. The current Chapter 90 code requires only a 1-to-1 mitigation ratio, so therefore we would be getting double the mitigation that we would normally get under our code by using this program. In addition, the mitigation reserves program requires perpetual monitoring and maintenance, whereas our current code only requires 5 years of monitoring and maintenance. Additionally, the mitigation reserves program utilizes best available science. They tend to focus on larger regional sites to get the most environmental benefit by either enhancing or creating, you know, new wetlands. And that the area that was selected is in the Sammamish River Basin. It's just to the east, and they needed a pretty big site to do that, and they have a site all set up to accept Astronix proposal and pay into this mitigation reserves program. I also mentioned that the applicant must provide public benefits or benefit or benefits, and the first public benefit that the applicant has proposed is to pay into a fund to create about 1,100 lineal feet of sidewalk, a curb gutter sidewalk, and a bike lane on the upside portion of Willows. So the red portion that you're seeing on the exhibit here is kind of like the missing link. And on the eastern portion of that red is the Astronix campus. So it will allow pedestrians to go off campus. Right now they can't really do that very safely. Go up to the east side rail corridor and down into the neighborhood. And as you can see, where the red line commences on Northeast 128th, there's sidewalk there. So it really will provide a great benefit there. Conversely, the neighborhood will be able to come up towards the east side rail corridor. So we're seeing that some of the good attributes or great attributes of this benefit is connectivity, public safety, and promoting alternative transportation, bicycling. I mentioned there, Astronix is proposing a second public benefit, and just for context here, there is a stream, on-site stream, non-fish bearing, and two small wetlands in the center of the site, and the applicant is proposing to restore the stream buffer. Right now it's kind of a degraded buffer, and here's kind of a blow up of that. The blue area is showing the stream when the flow, and there's kind of like a darkened band above the stream. That was the original proposal, to basically rip out a riprap road and plant it with different plants that would enhance the water quality and so forth. The watershed company, the city's consultant, reviewed this plan and made some really great recommendations that could easily be done. And I'm pleased to say that this is a preliminary plan, but the applicant took it to heart. They worked with their consultant, and they are going to be enhancing the entire stream buffer, north and south, adding conifers, adding native shrubs, and mulching the site to keep the site free of weeds and other invasives, which we believe will not only improve the water quality that's leaving the site and going to the Sammamish River where there are salmon, but also provide habitat for other animals that currently doesn't exist, and frankly will be very aesthetically pleasing to look at. So let's circle back to the PUD decisional criteria. Request must meet the requirements of Chapter 125, which is basically procedural, must provide public benefit, and show, and the benefits must clearly outweigh the impacts of the proposal. Since the impacts of this proposal are being essentially negated through the mitigation reserves program, the two public benefits that are being proposed clearly outweigh the negative impact of what they're requesting. And therefore, the hearing examiner recommends that this PUD application be approved, and subject conditions to the staff report outlined, that I outlined. That concludes my report, and I'm here to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Barnes? Mr. Nixon, please.
Just a question for clarification. Have we done any estimate of what the total cost is going to be of the work that's proposed on 139th Avenue and 128th Street, the curb, gutter, and bike lane? You know, like what percentage of that total cost will be covered by the $350,000 that's proposed?
I do have the answer to that.
Okay.
And we've done some preliminary cost estimating, and to do it's 1,100 feet of sidewalk and bike lane, and also some stormwater improvements, as well as some street and pedestrian lighting. It's about $800,000. So between this development and another development that's in the works, the city will be getting about $500,000, and we're working on the CIP right now for the remaining funding.
Great, thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Barnes? Thank you, Mr. Asher.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to move to suspend the rules so that we can take action on this at this meeting.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold to suspend the rules so the council can act and vote on this application tonight. Any discussion? All those in favor, will you please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no. Thank you very much. So I would ask, yes, thank you, Mr. Asher.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to move Ordinance 4526 relating to land use, approving the preliminary and final planned unit development applied for by Craft Architecture on behalf of Astronics Corporation, and setting forth conditions of approval.
Second. Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Sweet, to approve Ordinance 4526. Any discussion? Ms. Anderson, would you call the roll, please?
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Kloba?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
Yes.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Waller?
Yes. Thank you very much. Ordinance 4526 is approved after a lot of work. Thank you very much, Mr. Barnes.
Thank you.
The next item on our agenda is item 11B, also under new business. It's Ordinance 4527, affirming and clarifying the power of the of the appointing authority or designee to determine most qualifications for civil service positions. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. Oops, I just turned it off here and there. Thank you, Madam Mayor. So this presentation is going to be made by the City Attorney, but I wanted to just provide a little bit of background. You heard some testimony about the issue of education requirements for lateral transfers. That's not the issue before you tonight. The issue before you tonight in this ordinance is who should be making the decisions about the minimum requirements for classified positions, which are police and fire. This issue was covered a little bit in the memo, but it came to our attention earlier this year when we did make a request for a rule change at Civil Service Commission. And during some of those discussions, the issue of whether or not it was the appropriate role of the Civil Service Commission to set the minimum qualifications came up. At that time, I asked the city attorney to research the issue, and in the course of his research, his conclusion was that that appropriate role rested already with the appointing authority, which is the city manager or designee, in this case, the police chief. The Civil Service Commission was concerned with that and asked for additional legal review, which we agreed to and provided. And the conclusion of that legal review was that the City Council had the authority to clarify any ambiguity about whether or not the decision rested with the city administration. So I was therefore the one who proposed moving forward with this legislation in order to create that clarification. I do want to respond briefly to what Mr. Fox said at the beginning of this meeting, which is it was certainly not our intent to not provide them with adequate time to review and understand this ordinance. We did bring this ordinance to a meeting that they had on July 12th. The HR director made a pretty detailed presentation on it. They were received a copy of the ordinance itself. It's true we did not ask their position on it, since the underlying issue is really who should be making the final decision about minimum qualifications. So, but we did provide them with the opportunity to have the ordinance and hear the understanding behind it. Finally, I want to say that the reason we held it until now was so that we could make sure that there was actually a meeting of the commission to review the ordinance prior to it coming to the City Council. So we very much respect the role of the Civil Service Commission, and if they feel that was not adequate, that I apologize for that, but we did try to make sure that they were informed and aware of the discussion we were going to have with the council. So with that as background, I'll go ahead and turn over to the city attorney to walk you through it, and then we're both happy to answer any questions about the ordinance, and we're certainly also happy to answer any questions about the underlying issue of education requirements for the lateral transfers. Mr. Raymond.
Madam Mayor, members of the council, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. And just following along the remarks of the city manager, the issue associated with this ordinance is who has the authority to determine most qualifications for civil service positions, namely firefighters and police officers in Kirkland. Under state law, every city is required to have a system of civil service for its firefighters and police officers. There's two different statutes. One deals with firefighters and one with police officers, but they're virtually identical. And both require that cities with civil service systems have an independent civil service commission. In Kirkland, it's the Kirkland Civil Service Commission. The intent of the civil service system itself in general is to ensure that police officers and firefighters are selected and tenured based on merit and not patronage. So while the cities hire the police officers and the firefighters, it's the responsibility of the commission to administer applicant testing and to conduct investigations and undertake disciplinary hearings to make sure that police officers and firefighters are treated fairly once they become employees. There's also provisions in both these state laws that allow cities to develop their own code chapters providing for civil service systems and establishing civil service commissions if they substantially accomplish the purposes of the state law. And I'm satisfied that our code chapter, Kirkland Municipal Code Chapter 3.54, does that. In fact, it's in most respects identical to the state laws. There are some limit exceptions in state law carried forward word for word in Kirkland Municipal Code Chapter 3.54 that allow the Kirkland Civil Service Commission to determine the qualifications of both categories of appointments, police officers and firefighters. And the language in some respects sounds archaic, but it goes to these four general categories: U.S. citizen, suitable age, good health, moral character, temperate and industrious habits. There are no other references in our municipal code or in state law that refer to additional qualifications that civil service commissions are explicitly authorized to determine. And as noted by the city manager, my analysis, the analysis of the outside attorney that looked at this at the request of the Civil Service Commission, is that it's the city council's authority and responsibility to determine who it wishes to determine most qualifications for firefighters and police officers. The language in the municipal code, section 3.54090, is quoted there, and it talks about it being the responsibility of the city as the appointing authority to determine classifications, job descriptions, positions, and employments. And even more explicitly, this notion is carried forward in the Kirkland Civil Service Commission's rules and regulations in Article 6, Section 1, where it provides that the appointing authority, which is defined as the city manager, or when the city manager so delegates, the appropriate department official, which in most cases would presumably be the police chief or the fire chief, depending on the type of employee, shall classify all positions in the classified service, assigning to each class of position the appropriate title, experience, knowledge, capacity, skill, education, and other qualifications, including the minimum prerequisites to be required for appointment. So, coming full circle, the purpose of this ordinance is simply to affirm, if you wish to, and to clarify to the extent you consider it necessary and helpful, and I do recommend that you do that if you decide to approve this ordinance, that the city manager or the city manager's designee is responsible for determining most qualifications for Kirkland firefighter and police officer positions. As I've noted, in my view, this ordinance is consistent with state law and with our applicable code provisions. And the point that the city manager made to me, and I think is worth repeating, is that it does vest the authority to determine qualifications together with the places where the city is held accountable, with the city manager, with the police chief, with the fire chief. So that's an overview of this very simple code change as recommended by the ordinance. I'd be happy to answer any questions, and I know the city manager and the police chief would be available as well.
Thank you. Mr. Nixon.
Yeah, just for clarification, is there anything in the proposed language that would preclude the city manager or the police or fire chief from consulting with the members of the Civil Service Commission for advice and feedback on proposed changes to job qualifications?
No, Mr. Nixon, absolutely not. And it would, I think, from my perspective, and I think from the city managers and the chiefs as well, be a healthy thing for the appointing authority and the Civil Service Commission to have that kind of relationship going forward.
Thank you.
Ms. Globeth and Mr. Asher.
And along those same lines, would any of this language preclude the city manager to sort of share the process of determining the minimum qualifications, have a discussion with city council?
No, absolutely not.
And would there be maybe an intention to do so?
Certainly, yeah.
that's consistent of interest to the council. With your typical procedures.
Right.
I didn't think this would be much different. Thanks.
Thank you. Mr. Asher, then Ms. Sweet.
Thank you. I'm a bit troubled that the Standing Commission does not feel that they've had adequate time to consider or to look at this as a commission. And the suggestions just brought forth here in the questions might come out of some kind of a discussion like that, and I would prefer to let the commission have an opportunity, and if notice is their problem, we can get by notice problems pretty easily if we want to. So if noticing a meeting for that commission is their problem, I think we ought to be able to overcome that. But I would like to hear what they have to say.
Thank you, Ms. Sweet.
Okay, I actually, I agree with the questions asked and certainly Mr. Asher's comments. I have a concern, however, about time. I mean, we so highly value the input and the work that our commissions put in, and I think it's important. I'm concerned that I perceive the same thing, that commissioners do not feel, they're frustrated and they don't feel involved. However, if our current hiring situation is as bad as it is, and we're in such a competitive and highly competitive environment across the state, it seems to me to be clear that we need to move in this direction. We need to move in a direction that's, well, and the policy clearly states in my mind that the hiring authority is either the city manager or its designee. I think the conversation should continue, but I truly believe that we should move forward with this ordinance in order to allow us to go ahead in the hiring process.
Thank you. Mr. Arnold.
We rely a lot on our volunteer boards and commissions for input. Sometimes we do take their recommendations. Sometimes we don't. In this case, while the commission has been briefed on this, we have not received a recommendation. I have tried to contact individual commissioners to get some feedback and was not able to connect with all of them. They, as a commission, tried to meet and go as far as to have a special meeting and were unable to schedule it. And I would be in favor of hearing a formal recommendation from them before we take action, provided that that could happen before our next meeting.
Thank you, Mr. Nixon.
But on the other hand, I'm impressed by the fact that the existing established policies of this commission already say that it's the city's authority to set the qualifications for positions. And all this ordinance does is make sure that our city code reflects that existing policy. We're not talking about adopting any change to the qualifications tonight, and there would still be very much a process that we would go through that would give the Civil Service Commission, and presumably the Guild even, but the ability to comment and feedback on that. So I think that simply taking the step of making the city code align with the existing policy of the commission is the right step to take, and I would do it tonight.
Can I ask about time sensitivity of this topic?
You know, I think the general issue is just the hiring challenge faced by the department, but, you know, we're trying every day to get new applicants, whether it's lateral or entry level, but there's no specific difference between today and, you know, a week from today or 2 weeks from today. But I think the sooner this issue is resolved, the better. And I want to clarify that there was a meeting of the commission on this issue, and they did have the ordinance. It's just that they chose not to make any decisions at that meeting. But we certainly can certainly discuss with them more.
Thank you. And we don't meet as a unit for another month.
Right.
Mm-hmm. August
15th.
So if we don't pass this ordinance, we would not be able to adapt to current market conditions to change job qualifications to be able to hire police officers for another month?
Well, it would be arguable. One could take the position that I could assert that the existing rules allow us to make that decision, or one could take the position that the existing lateral rule rules. And so we are trying to actually avoid that issue if we have a direct conflict in the rules today, and this would clarify that direct conflict. We also have the issue, if you step back from that, which the city attorney can speak to if you want, about whether those rules even apply anyway, because the basic issue is who has the appointing authority. So I think I would not want to proceed with a change while this ambiguity was out here. But I think that would be a decision we'd have to make if no action was taken.
Maybe I can just add something that may be something that the commission knows and that we know, but that may not be well known amongst the council members. I want to explain the conflict that the city manager is making reference to. This issue surfaced, as you can tell, in the context of whether or not there should continue to be a post-secondary educational requirement for lateral police officer hires, even though a similar requirement doesn't apply to firefighters or to any other classification of police officers. the issue surfaced because the Civil Service Commission's rules and regulations, on the one hand, very explicitly state that it's the city manager or the city manager's designee that determines educational and other qualifications, and provisions that have been in the lateral police officer appointment section of the rules and regulations, the commission since 2005, that impose a post-secondary educational requirement. And so the idea initially was that the then interim police chief felt that that was an unhelpful requirement given the current market. And a conversation began between the city and the Civil Service Commission about whose authority this was and what to do about this conflict. And eventually, it's much more complicated history than this, but eventually the decision was made, we need to figure out who has the authority first, and then we can talk about qualifications. And so that's the conflict that the city manager's referencing.
Thank you. Well, I personally feel strongly that the Civil Service Commission can fulfill its mission of ensuring that officers are selected and tenured based on merit and not patronage without needing to determine the basic qualifications, and that the management of a department needs to determine the basic qualifications and be able to quickly adapt to market conditions which change, and in an incredibly competitive and demanding employment environment that we are in at this moment, we need to be able to hire police officers. And it's particularly poignant tonight that it's going to become more and more difficult to hire police officers, and I want our chief to have all the tools at her disposal as soon as possible. So I would be supportive of a motion. Comments, Mr. Nixon.
Madam Mayor, I'd like to move that we adopt Ordinance 4527.
Second.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Nixon, seconded by Councilmember Sweet, to adopt Ordinance 4527. Further discussion. Ms. Clova.
Well, and I really want to make sure that we're separating it into what we're talking about is who gets to set the minimum qualifications. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested in afterwards having the conversation. And I like you had mentioned, the Civil Service Commission, the Police Guild, perhaps the 100 people that were downstairs yesterday talking about their need for a better feeling of safety, and how does their priority of whether or not we hire more police and what their qualifications might be. I think that that is a more robust discussion, but it does have to start just with this core piece. So I'm in favor of it.
Thank you. Mr. Asher.
I would like to give the Civil Service Commission the opportunity of recommending the insertion of a word in consultation with or something along that line, so I won't support this being passed tonight.
Thank you. Other comments? Mr. Arnold.
It appears that there's support to vote on this, or there's support for this tonight. And so if we're looking at the decision not on the particular issue on qualification, but the policy issue on who should determine it, our professional leadership and police and fire is in the best position to determine the qualifications needed and what education, real world, or military experience meets these, especially in the difficult jobs of firefighter and police officer. I'm confident that as we move forward, our Civil Service Commission will continue to ensure that that process is run with integrity, and hope to continue to have their input. I hope the city will continue to seek their input as we move forward. Thank you.
I agree. Thank you. Yes, Mr. Asher.
In fact, is there a way that we can keep hope alive? That we pass this tonight, we give the opportunity, and then we also let the Civil Service Commission come back and say if they would like to amend the language in any way, they could recommend that, and we could still keep that alive.
Certainly. I think anytime you can seek the advice of your commissions on existing or future legislation, so absolutely we'd be happy to talk with them about that.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Nixon and seconded by Councilmember Sweet to approve Ordinance 4527. If we can have the roll, please, Ms. Anderson.
Councilmember Nixon?
Yes.
Councilmember Clova?
Yes.
Councilmember Asher?
No.
Councilmember Sweet?
Yes.
Deputy Mayor Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Wallen?
Yes. Thank you very much. The next item on our agenda is also a new business. Thank you, Mr. Raymond. We're moving right along. It's item 11C, the Public Records Disclosure Semiannual Report. City Manager.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Mayor. When we adopted our public disclosure rules and ordinance, you asked for a report every 6 months on how we're doing. So here to give you the second semiannual report of the year is our public disclosure officer, Amy Robles.
Good evening, Madam Mayor, Council. It's my pleasure to be here before you this evening and give you a brief update and some of the highlights from our semiannual performance report. And just a point of clarification, this is actually the report the first half of, of 2016. So January through June. This slide here that we have is a representation of all of the five reporting periods that we have so far since we have implemented the use of the WebQA software in 2014. In the last reporting period, we've actually seen an overall increase in the number of requests received, and that's more than any other reporting period so far since we've been collecting this data. So we had approximately, we had 2,262 total requests just in this six-month period. In this slide, we see here where we have the processing time, so the average processing time broken down by each category. I didn't include category one because we haven't had a category one request. And this gives you an idea of how we're processing in the amount of days those requests. Category twos are, of course, our kind of routine requests, ones that we're seeing most often. It's our largest category of requests, the most that we do. Ones that are routine, things that are easily identifiable. We're processing those in this current reporting period in approximately 3.2 days. So a slight increase, but still well within the five-day expectation. We had the biggest increase, of course, in our more complex requests, which would be category fours and fives. And part of that is just due to the complexity of those requests, and also because in some of the other reporting periods, we had some larger requests that were ultimately withdrawn, and so that impacted the processing time, that average time. And that brings me to questions. Any comments?
Incredibly efficient report. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of detailed data collection, though, on the time that you're spending on each category. Thank you. Comments or questions?
Thank you for suffering through this.
Just and really, by complete and brief report, I mean, this is amazing when you mm-hmm. consider the complexity and the amount of time and energy that we put into this. So, reflecting thanks to you, thanks to Kathy, thanks to the early work with Mr. Nixon. I'm really proud of this process.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your report. Mr.
Madam
Nixon.
Mayor. Well, I just wanted to highlight the fact that the staff report did say that the staff's assessment is that our current level of resources is adequate to meet the demand, which is kind of the whole point of doing these reports, right, is to make sure that we're keeping up with kind of that base level of demand, because that's very important if we were ever challenged for taking too long to respond to a request. So thank you very much for including that information in the report.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Clova.
And kudos. The category of reports that we see the most of are, like you said, I just want to repeat, well within the five-day expectation.
Yes.
So even though it's ticked up, you're still doing a very good job for our the folks who request these things. So thank you. I know transparency is important to all of us, and we appreciate the work you do.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. So would the council like to press on, or would you like to take a break? Press on. A couple more items?
Pressing.
Great. Let's press on. Item 11D, then, is the Cross Kirkland Corridor Art Integration Plan. City Manager.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Mayor. So
yes,
could I have Don, are you doing the introduction of this? Okay, so the chair of our Cultural Arts Commission, Don Laurent, is going to do a brief introduction of the Art Integration Plan.
Well, thank you very much. I'm here tonight to introduce the Art Integration Plan. And this has been over a year's worth of work, collaborating with the commissioners, the city, the Berger Group, and the community. This involved a very robust public process where we had several meetings and invited community members to give us their thoughts about what they would like to see regarding art on the corridor. All this has come into this wonderful plan that develops guidelines for us to make decisions about art on the corridor in the future. We have this amazing scenic recreational asset, which is the corridor, and it's also an amazing opportunity for art. And we want to make sure that any art that's placed on the corridor respects the natural beauty and the environment. And so whether it be ephemeral art, permanent art, visual art, or performance art, it should all be respectful of the environment and also reflect Kirkland's unique character and the character of our neighborhoods, our culture and tradition. So we took all this into consideration while we were planning and making up the plans. And I would like to, and I think we did a great job, and I'd like to introduce the leader of our process, Guy Michelson, who is the principal at Berger Partnership. He was also the consultant for the CKC Corridor Master Plan, the Redmond Corridor Plan, and he's been involved in some wonderful projects locally and regionally. So I'd like to invite Guy to come up, and he's going to take us through the plan.
Thank you.
We always like it when Guy.
Yes. Good evening.
Hi, Guy.
The odds have been laid that I will not get through this in the allotted 10 minutes. So I have a timer, and I'm going to start it now. All right. Well, I am thrilled to be here. I'm going to make one quick IT adjustment in the hopes that I can put two up. I'm going to try to just delete the cover real quickly. If I can figure this out, just a sec. Let's see if I can figure that out.
Your clock's ticking.
I know. But this is good stuff.
You.
This is dead air. That's a curse. You never want to do that.
We'll talk amongst ourselves.
I think it's read only.
Yeah, you're in a PDF rather than a PowerPoint.
Oh no, I know. okay, I'm not going to worry about that though. So what I'll do. Let me see if I. Nope, that's not going to do it. All right. Sorry about that. Okay, we'll go this way. So, real quickly, I'm sure you've received this digitally. You've read every word. So everything I'm going to say tonight, you already know. But nonetheless, we'll go through the motions. The art plan is broken into a number of chapters. The first thing is the big idea. What is the role of this art master plan, and how can it influence not just the CKC, but how can it influence the city as a whole? And so that's addressed in our first chapter, The Big Ideas, and we'll run through this all really quickly. Then we talk a little bit about outreach and input, because we did have a really great, robust outreach process as part of this, but the great news is that's not over. This is really a living document. For starters, is before you adopt it, there's public comment. And the other thing that exists in here is this thing we call the scrapbook at the end, and we hope that the scrapbook continues to get populated with great ideas so this truly can be a living document, because you know that a good report is out of date the second it's done. And so we'd love this to become a living document, and that's definitely true with art as well. So let's go ahead and run through these. So then we get into a number of strategies for how we recommend art be considered on the corridor. And then finally, actions, like how are we really going to make this happen? How are you involved in making this happen? What are the other organizations and opportunities to make this happen? And how do we manage it all? And then we close with a scrapbook, which is just, again, a series of ideas, the all-important acknowledgments, and then the appendices, which is actually a really fun section that documents our public process. So I'm going to power through these ideas. I would remind you that this is a companion document to the CKC master plan. We addressed art, but in about 2 pages. And that just barely scratched the surface of the opportunity for art in the CKC. And that's the reason that we delve in here. So we're not trying to restate the master plan. We're trying to add and enrich it. Now, I know you have your dog-eared copy of the master plan, and you want to pull it out and reference it all the time. But most people won't. And so this is a document that's designed to stand alone and tell the story. So we introduce the CKC as a whole, and then we talk about what is some of the takeaway messages of the CKC. Remember, art brings something different. It means you have to let it have that freedom. My take on great art is oftentimes it's, man, I could have done that, but I didn't. Art answers a question that you didn't realize needed to be asked, and that's the opportunity for art. And so the goal for this master plan is to both inspire art for the CKC, but also for the city as a whole, but to also back that inspiration with concrete steps to guide art policy. The corridor is a physical space now. The cool thing is we said this when we started on this project last fall, and we said, but it has the potential to become a community and a cultural space. And I think, though, the cool thing is that that's already happening. People are really adopting this space, and it is getting into the DNA of Kirkland residents. And that's really what leads to the next big idea, which is the CKC itself is this 100-foot band that winds. Uh-oh, Penny, you're laughing at something. What have I said wrong? Okay, phew. So while the CKC is just this 100-foot band of wonderful territory that winds through the majority of your city, its presence and art on the corridor have an impact far beyond just that narrow piece of territory. And so as we think about art on the Cross Kirkland Corridor, we think about it as for now and in the future, and informs both simple and elaborate, but always unique to Kirkland. So I'm going to speak a little bit to this. If you have time, please do read the separate paragraphs. But the thing is, the big idea here is there's a trap in cities to think about art as 1% for arts. And we're going to do a project, and certain projects qualify, and we're going to have 1%, and we're going to build something. It's going to be something physical. We're going to put it there, and it's going to be there forever. And that would be a missed opportunity in thinking about art in your city that way and art on the corridor that way. There is a place for that kind of art. It's really important. It's really valuable. But to really make arts a value and a quality that will define your community, you have to start now, even before there's huge funding opportunities in place. And the way you do that is you start with simple things. You can start with ephemeral things and build on what you have, leverage what you have in your community now and build on it, but definitely dream the dream of what you can do in the future so you're building towards something and that you can have those amazing, elaborate celebrations of art, many of which you'll see as you look through the pictures in this document. And there's a great example of, I think, probably your latest or one of your latest piece is right out here, of great public art. The plan really was shaped by the community who came out on a November and January night in particular in bad weather, and we had a lot of fun. Great participation, lots of opinions, lots of post-it notes, and then a follow-up where we got some really good ideas, some completely crazy ideas, some of which were really good. There's no bad ideas, right? Some of these ideas were insane, but they were super fun, and they really influenced our plan. And one of the things that was fun to learn out of this was people's definitions of what makes Kirkland special. And answers were all over the board. My favorite was, let's see if we have it in here. We don't, is the Costco signature brand, the Kirkland signature brand. And that leaves us with what are our strategies. And the first thing is empower art in all its forms. You've heard me talk already about 1% for art as should not be our default. So when we think about that, yes, it can be 1% for art, but it can also be ephemeral things. It can be performance things. It can be things that come from your community that your community members do, and we'll give some examples of those later, as well as the big permanent significant investments in art. So again, if you're getting the theme, it's about starting small. It's about making change now. It's about bringing art to the corridor now. One of the big strategies is we have to honor the corridor. The corridor is largely fantastic now. There are some places where it is maybe a little less fantastic than others, but we need to honor the corridor. Art should only be enhancing the corridor. It shouldn't be detracting from that. We'll talk about that in a minute, but as we look at different areas, we just need to make sure that sometimes art can overpower a place and it can detract from a place, and there are places along this corridor that are too perfect to let that happen. Won't go through all those, but that dovetails nicely into our building on the character zones. You know and love the character zones from the master plan and the convergence zone, which I still keep calling it by the wrong name, which I shall not utter. But again, one of the things we're doing is we're building on the character zones, and we're building on, in the master plan, we talk a lot about each of the character zones. And one of the things we reference in here is everything that's in there is all still valid, but we have gone through and zone by zone talked about some opportunities and some inspirations. And I'm not going to walk through all of these now, but I'll hit a few key themes. Like, for example, Yarra Woods is very naturalistic and introverted. So it suggests that there's some opportunity to weave something in there as a juxtaposition into that nature. Versus the Houghton Porch is completely extroverted. It's all about that westward view. It's all about the territorial and regional quality of that. And there might be a temptation of some to say, aha, this place is amazing. Here is where I put this incredible piece of art that shall now dominate this space. And that would be an example where we need to honor the corridor and say, no, actually, this is an area that's pretty amazing now, and art kind of wants to be a little quieter here. Maybe it's in a handrail that you're running your hand along and you realize there's something amazing there or something embedded in the paving. But what we don't need to do is have, like, a 60-foot-high popsicle or something that's this amazing piece of art that is distracting you from the amazing place you're in. The convergence zone, again, is this exceptional opportunity. And one of the opportunities there is how can we leverage the technology, the emerging technology field, the technology triangle, boom, dropped it, of Kirkland to actually really shape art in that area, and particularly with ephemeral art, and to really have technology be part of it, which does not mean make art out of technology, because then what you'll be doing is after 2 years you'll be cursing yourself because those cathode ray tubes that were amazing when you put them in 5 years ago are embarrassingly out of date and you can't afford to maintain them. But let technology shape the art. What is the analog response that the technology can shape? Highlands Pass is sort of like Yarra Woods, in my opinion, probably pretty sacred, and art wants to be a little more subtle there. The Norkirk Edge, I think art, one of the opportunities there is, one of the things we've talked a lot about the CKC is it doesn't actually go downtown. So how can we use art as a trail of breadcrumbs to connect people from the CKC to downtown, and conversely, from downtown to the CKC? The West Totem Lake Connector, a.k.a. the 405 underpass, undercrossing, you know, that's an amazing opportunity. It's one of the areas that is just ripe to do something amazing and to utilize the scaffold that's there, whether it's for ephemeral art or permanent art, but it's also a place for performance. It has cover. You could do things there on rainy days, and it could be fantastic. So, ideas for all those areas. Reach beyond the corridor. We already have a great model with that, with Google. We just shouldn't be thinking myopically about this corridor. We have to look where we can leverage not just outside space, but outside resources and outside dollars to make that happen. Art today and in the future, the corridor is going to continue to evolve. Now, I know there's no discussion or controversy at that in the city at all, so it's not really an issue, but we thought we'd mention it, which is the possibility of something happening in the future should never be used to deny the opportunity of seizing an opportunity now. So don't worry, art can be managed and thoughtfully so that it can be done now, and it does not have to get in the way or be a bad investment based on what we're going to do in the future. There's already a lot of great existing things out there that can be enhanced with really simple ideas. You're already spending money on the corridor now with great investments that you need, that are required, that are operationally needed. Take those required elements and make them more inspired. You have a ton of signage out there now. It's great. It's necessary. Probably over time that signage is going to adapt. What if there was a guideline that was developed that the carrying of all this signage actually became a piece of art in itself? That would be amazing and unique and enriching, rather than just a statement of regulatory need. There's a number of corridor-wide opportunities. Because it is this long corridor, I'm not going to go through them all, but there's really some unique art themes that could be pulled out because the corridor is so wonderfully long. I'm checking my time here. Oh, man. I'm short. Oh, man, I'm already way over. I lost the bet, you guys. All right, corridor-wide opportunities. And then key strategies are investing in artists that promote local artists. Again, it's that homegrown piece, especially on the front end of this project or the opportunities, but also aspiring to engage regional and national and even international artists that we should make the CKC so amazing that they want to come here, that there is an ephemeral recurring art event here that people want to be a part of. And I think that's completely reasonable to expect. And then we get into how are we going to make art happen on the corridor. And we've devised this little device we call the Art Walk, which is expanding on the theme you've already heard, which is too often we think of this blue bar at the bottom, permanent public art, as art. And there's all these other levels, from short-term art to ephemeral art. Ephemeral art can be divided into multiple categories. And we should be really trying to welcome all of that art. And if you look actually at the percentage or the size of these bars, that represents kind of the percentage of art you may have on this corridor, because there's only so much room for permanent art in this corridor. If everything was permanent, you would have a very junky corridor. But the idea of temporary art, well, now that's something that changes over time and it can be embraced. And the same is true with ephemeral art. And there's a reason that this guidance arrow starts skinny and gets bigger, which is as an investment in art, a fiscal investment in art, and the duration that that art is going to be there increases, it's important to provide more guidance. The guidance through the CAC and your guidance and involvement. And so you continue to have a voice in the shaping of the art on the CKC. And the goal is to make sure you have that voice ever kind of louder as things become more permanent and the investment is more significant, but that your voice is not getting in the way for great things happening that might be short-term or very simple things that can be done on the corridor. So spontaneous live performance. I love this. This is a woman on the Atlanta Beltline who goes and plays the violin every day and tows her dog behind her. She is not paid, but she makes it a more artful and creative place. Who are the crazy people in Kirkland who will bring spontaneous life performance to your corridor? And this is the Henry Wizard, Compassion Wizard. He puts these up all over Seattle, and then he takes them down. And they enrich the place for people who enjoy them, and then they go away. The same thing can happen. Ephemeral art, same thing. A little more guidance, but there's some skin in the game. You're hiring someone. You're coordinating an event. Short-term or curated art here on the High Line. The High Line has no permanent art. The High Line only curates its art, and it comes and goes seasonally. And then finally, what we all know is permanent public art. So then we get into providing the guidance, the nuts and bolts, where we have a lot of CKC-specific ideas. Again, you should read all this. It's super good. About what we should do for the CKC specifically. And a big part of that is just thinking about how we fund art. And again, recurring theme, it's not all 1% for arts. Think differently about 1% for arts. 1% for arts does not mean it needs to be fixed where that 1% budget was. You can invest in something mobile. You could maybe develop something for a project down by the South Kirkland Park and Ride, but it could be a mobile element that could find its home, depending on the right time, anywhere on the corridor. Clearly, there's the opportunity to leverage public works projects. There's the opportunity for philanthropy. There's the opportunity to pursue grants. I think the important thing to know with all of these is there is a requirement of, not a requirement, you're going to have a lot more success with some level of skin in the game, because people who want to give their money to you to be the difference maker need to know you're serious enough that you're going to provide that seed money to start it. So then there's art policy. This is my favorite. I'm going to read this all. It's really good. Trust me. And then we get to the scrapbook, which is, again, these living, fun ideas of what we can do. And it starts with phantasmagoria, which is this great idea that Ellen and Philly are working on, this amazing celebration of light and lanterns that builds over a period of time. Am I saying that right? Okay, phew. Which is an incredible opportunity for a whole series of events that build and culminate on the corridor. And then I'll throw out my plug for my favorite is I love this unused equipment shed left on the corridor, which would be great to be the Kirkland Curio. And I think it'd be cute to change the C in Curio to a K, Kirkland Curio. And just imagine that becomes this curio cabinet that the city manages, that the CAC manages, that can showcase a different collection of craziness. I don't know what Kurt collects, but one day maybe, one month he gets to showcase his crazy collection of...
Lord of the Rings books.
Yes, perfect. So it could be a really fun, low-cost way to do something fun. So that's the idea of the scrapbook. Lots of ideas in there, the acknowledgments, and then we close with the appendices, which again, take some time and actually look through them. There is just so much fun stuff in here from your community. So that's the art plan. I went dreadfully over time, but it was so entertaining, I'm sure. So thank you all very much for this opportunity.
Over time, but not dreadfully. It was very good. Thank you. Questions or comments for Guy? Yes, please. Ms. Kloba, then Mr. Asher.
Well, I'm very excited to see the emphasis on the ephemeral arts. And I happen to be eating lunch today in Pioneer Square, and they have artists who come periodically during the summer. And I'd had a rough morning, and I can't tell you how valuable it was to listen to this particular performance and the nature of I'll never hear it again. I don't know who the
Absolutely.
Guy was.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if he's ever recorded any of it. It was his own interpretation of things that I've heard before, but they were different. And there was just something very precious about that gets you to pause. And I think that there are many... I'm glad you expanded it beyond just a auditory music, but other types of ephemeral art that really make things that much more special. The other point... Well, I guess it's sort of 2 points. Reaching beyond the arts community. I have a family who will not, even if I drag them, go to an art museum. Mom, you look at everything too long. But for them to experience art just going about their business, just doing their commute, that would make me very happy to expose them whether they want to or not.
And if we're crafty, they don't even know that they're absorbing
they
it.
So somewhere in, and I'm glad at the end you make reference to that this is a transit corridor that is evolving. Currently we're transiting it on our feet and on our wheels, but eventually it could be more. I'd love to see if maybe we could put in some verbiage about, you know, you guys talk about how art can add a layer of interest and attraction to the corridor for those who live here, but I'd like to add, and those who use the CKC for recreation and commuting purposes. So just kind of infuse it more than just at the end to help people remember that that's where that corridor is going. And again, kind of circling back to the beginning of what I talked about, adding moments of culture to an otherwise routine daily experience. Like, I was eating my lunch, but I had this lovely little piece of culture that stumbled its way into my life, and I think that would enhance all of us. So thank you for this wonderful plan. It's great.
Thank you, Mr. Asher.
Thank you, Guy. As always, you're mesmerizing. But I think the aspect that you mentioned, the mobility piece, needs to be emphasized more in the plan, and it needs to be included visually. This, you know full well, is a multimodal corridor, and we need to demonstrate that multimodality in all of the components of the Cross Kirkland Corridor master plan, which, as you rightfully say, this is a piece of that. That's the only thing I think is worth commenting, other than normal accolades with everything that you bring to us. Thank you.
Thanks.
Yes. Mr. Arnold.
Like we saw with the Cross Kirkland Corridor Master Plan, and when you started out, there was just master plan, and what came out of that was well beyond anything that we expected in the possibilities. Same with what we're seeing tonight. Art integration plan, wow, this, when you take a look at it, how art can actually enhance the character and really be integrated. In particular, some of the things that caught my eye, and I'm thinking about what we could do with the Norkirk Edge and integrate art and make that more functional and feel more safe and deal with some perceived problems. I love your idea of performance on the other undercrossing there. And it integrates well in recognizing the different character zones and how those should be treated differently. I really like how it's come together. The chuckle around DNA, I think, comes from the fact that, yes, the Cross-Kirkland Corridor has been part of the DNA of Kirkland, but also has triggered kind of the survival instinct, fight or flight, in some aspects. And so one of the things that, while we've gotten great input into this to get to this point, I do want to make sure that the community gets a chance to see this before we formally adopt it. And in the very least, I think if we could get a presentation to the Kirkland Alliance of Neighborhoods on this plan and how the community input came up into this, I think that'll do a lot to build support for what we're trying to do, not just in the art, but the ephemeral art and things that are going to happen sooner rather than later.
Cool.
So thank you.
Ms. Sweet. Echoing what everybody else said, you make your plans dance for us, and I think that's a fabulous thing. So thank you very much.
Thanks. It's the opportunity that's great. I mean, I love to put on a show, but it's the opportunity of this corridor that's what's amazing.
And isn't our Cultural Arts Commission incredibly talented, energetic, and creative?
I don't like them very much.
Uh-huh. It shows.
Don't tell them. Mm-hmm.
I think the work product says otherwise.
Cool.
Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for all your hard work. We really appreciate it. It's a beautiful thing. So we might finish up one more item on our agenda before we stop for a break, and that's item 11E, approving the Cross-Kirkland Corridor temporary art proposal. City Manager.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Mayor. So your first opportunity to approve some ephemeral art on the corridor has been the subject of discussion and approval by the Cultural Arts Commission. So here to talk about that again is Don Laurent, the chair of the commission.
So Guy is a hard act to follow. Thanks, Guy. But he also perfectly set up what we're going to be talking about, what I'm going to be talking about next, which is the artist in residence. So we have gone through a process where we have found an artist, and I want to talk to you a little bit about that. And it's going to be very exciting because we're going to make art happen sooner than later. So the Cultural Arts Commission has encouraged art events and art activations, proposals, ideas. This whole process has been wonderful since the corridor opened. So we've been paying attention, taking notes. And we do receive an $8,000 grant from For Culture King County. And this year, the commission decided to budget $1,600 for that to put towards an art installation on the corridor, or something to happen on the corridor. We work closely with the CKC coordinator, Kari Page, and the CKC service team, and I wish that Philly had put the photo in of Kari driving her golf cart as we go from one side of, or one end of the corridor to the other. And we did that to identify sites that would have great opportunities for art, and also some restrictions. It might be size, it might be noise, you know, whatever that was. But as we were thinking about what this installation was going to be, what it was going to look like, it really helped to ride the corridor with Kari and identify those different characteristics. And so we did put out the proposal, the call for artists. We had six artists apply, and we decided to interview four finalists. We, in the process of the writing the proposal, we decided, yeah, we want to have art happen sooner. And so the nice thing about ephemeral art is it's a relatively low budget. relatively low footprint, as in environmental footprint, but a high visual and high artistic impact. And so we thought about different characteristics of the proposal that we wanted the artists to think about. What would they be using for their art? Because ephemeral art is temporary. And I did put up a little definition here that temporal art, it's environmental, using natural materials, allowing the viewer to perceive art and nature as one single moment of expression. An underlying concept is humans' direct relationship with nature and the impulse to work as one. So it's a very nice combination. Everything we've been saying about art being respectful, not competing with the beauty of the corridor, but being right in place with. And we pulled a little quote from the CKC plan about the corridor aspiring to be a place that invites and displays the creativity and artistic passion of the community, from fleeting performances to displays of short-duration physical art. The key to welcoming this art is respect for neighbors, to limit noise, respect for the site's existing character. And so the ephemeral art just seemed like a really great type of art to put on the corridor first. We want to get people excited, and like Shelley said, you know, you're walking by, you're driving by, your kids don't even know it, and all of a sudden there's this great art happening. And they may even participate, because another characteristic that we wanted to include in this is that we had a community participation. So, we'll go forward here. We interviewed our four artists, and it was a unanimous selection of Tara Holcomb. And Tara is a Kirkland resident. She walks the trail every day. And in fact, I had met her at one of our public forums, and she had come up, and we were talking about some of the projects that she's been involved with. She's created a lot of public art. She's worked a lot with ephemeral materials. And she just finished this, I think it was like 15-foot dress made of leaves that you walk through, and that's something that she just created. And so she's had a lot of experience working with this type of artwork. So her proposal to us, and there's a concept design here, is to use black cottonwood leaves that would be collected along the trail to create a 10-foot ephemeral hollow tree. Made of burlap and leaf mosaic panels, it would be set over a wood structure or armature. And she would incorporate solar light, so it would be lit at night. There'd be little hollows that you could look into and see little poetic inscriptions that she'll be putting on the inside. And the site that she had selected, because we did ask all the artists to tell us what sites on the corridor they saw their artwork best suited, and she selected this 116th Avenue in the Highlands, the Forbes Creek area. So the nice thing about Tara is that she's worked a lot with community art before. She loves the idea of bringing in school kids and the community to collect the leaves along the trail over the course of a few weeks. And then she'll also have some workshops that she'll set up for us to learn how to sort, collect, because when she's collecting over the course of the first few weeks on the trail, you've got yellow and orange and green and all these different colors, and so she's going to have the kids put the leaves in different colors and even show how to create the burlap panels that will then go onto the armature. So some of the work will be created off-site. A lot of it will be on-site. And her role is really to lead and guide this and to encourage the community to be involved. So I can just see little collection boxes, little description of the art project, you know, find cottonwood leaves on the ground and put them in this box, and then she'll come along with her kids and collect them, and then it'll be put together into this great art installation. We also asked her how she would document this process, because we'd like to have some kind of culmination presentation, maybe something on the corridor, It could be an exhibition of the photographs of the community putting this together. And it's going to be exciting. It'll inspire us. And I think it's going to be a great, wonderful project to have on the corridor. So we're hoping that it will stay in place through mid-November. We asked Tara, well, how long will this last? Oh, because she's also putting bird seed at the top of the tree, so she's going to invite wildlife to also participate in the art. But she said this piece could last for months and months. I mean, eventually the materials will disintegrate, but we thought probably by mid-November we would, you know, have it removed. But that'll be a lot of time for everybody to enjoy it and watch it change over time. So that is our presentation, and if you have any questions about the process or how we selected Tara, but I think you'll all be really pleased with what she's going to create.
Thank you very much. Comments or questions, Mr. Asher?
Madam Mayor, I'd simply like to move to approve Tara Holcomb as the artist in residence for a temporary art installation on the Cross Kirkland Corridor.
Second. Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Clover, to approve the selection of Tara Holcomb as the artist in residence for a Cross Kirkland Corridor temporary art installation. Discussion. Well, yes, Ms. Clover.
Just very quickly, I did not realize this was the same artist who had put together a whole orca, like this 10-foot
yes.
orca. And I saw yes. the community on, I think it was one of the Facebook pages, Buy Nothing Kirkland, I think, and how everybody got invested. Mm-hmm. And any time that we can bring new eyes and new mm-hmm. energy and get people invested in one of our wonderful community assets, I think that's a wonderful thing. So that's, I'm happy that you picked her.
And I completely agree.
Thank you, Shelley, for bringing that up, because Tara did, so she had this idea to create orca out of bottle caps, the plastic bottle caps. And so she had one class bring all the bottle caps you can, and there were only about 300, and she realized she needed more like 10,000. So this became more of a citywide project. And you're right, people, when they are part of something, they become invested in that thing. So that's why this kind of art for the corridor now, at this time, is really important, because we do want people to feel invested in that process and be excited about, you know, the art that comes. So thank you for mentioning that.
Thank you for your hard work. The question is on the motion to approve the selection of Tara Holcomb as the artist in residence for the Cross Kirkland Corridor temporary art installation. It was moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Councilmember Kloba. Will all those in favor please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. Thank you. The motion is approved.
Thank you
very much for being here this evening.
Thank you very much for your support of the artists. Thank you.
Yay! So we're going to take a 10-minute break, and we'll be back to conclude our business. Thank you. We're live, Mayor. Thank you very much. We're back in session after a short break. And the next item on our agenda is also under new business. It's item 11F, Resolution 5200, authorizing and supporting the city's request for Port of Seattle Economic Development Partnership Program funds.
So moved.
Thank you. It's been moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Councilmember Sweet, to approve Resolution 5200. Discussion.
Great opportunity.
Now, I see that it's a resolution, but do we need a roll call or just it's a motion? Okay. Thank you very much. All those in favor, will you please say aye?
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, say no. Thank you very much. Resolution 5200 is approved. Thank you for your hard work on this, Ellen.
Thank you very much.
Yep. Very exciting, actually. The next item on our agenda is item 11G, is Resolution 5201, approving amendments to certain sections of the Kirkland City Council policies and procedures and readopting all of the Council's policies and procedures. City Manager.
Okay, thank you, Madam Mayor. So we don't have a presentation for this. The reasons for the change were included in the memo. I do want to note that we did have some non-substantive changes that were identified by Councilmember Nixon. So we have a updated attachment. The resolution adopts attachment A, so you have that in front of you. And so our recommendation is adoption, but we're happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for the staff? Mr. Nixon.
I just noticed an issue potentially with the amendment that I proposed, because I noticed a typo, a Scrivener's error, really, in section 4.02, but 4.02 is not listed amongst the amended sections in the title of the resolution. Does that matter, or can you just fix it as a Scrivener's error anyway?
We talked about it, the city clerk, and my opinion is we can just fix it as a Scrivener's error. It didn't seem to merit a substitute resolution.
Great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'd entertain a motion to Mr. Asher.
Yes, Madam Mayor. I'd move to approve the changes and readopt the council policies and procedures. And there's a...
Resolution 5201.
Yeah, 5201. That's what I meant.
Thank you.
Second.
Thank you. Moved by Councilmember Asher, seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold to approve Resolution 5201. Would you like to speak to the motion, sir?
I would like to mention several things for the next iteration of this, if whoever is on the committee might take note. On attachment A, on e-page 302, I'd like to see us change where it talks about we will refrain from negotiating or making commitments without the involvement and knowledge of the city manager. I would suggest that we change that to we will refrain from negotiating or making commitments beyond our individual effort, because we aren't the negotiating end of things unless we are designated so specifically. And we've had some examples of that recently that have not served us very well. The second area is I'd like for us to review the attendance, remote attendance. It was initially set up as a, I think we've moved beyond what the wording is in here to where we can more normally adopt it. I see on page 308 there's a number of sections there. I think if we take a look at it in light of what we've had occur since we initially adopted it, we can more normally generalize this language than I think that we originally did when we had not done it before. Mm-hmm. So I think we've become more comfortable with the procedure. So that's just a general item. That last one just included general comments about that area. Thank you.
So our conversations in finance and administration about council policies and procedures have not concluded, correct? They're never concluded.
They never concluded, yes.
Right. You never.
So we can
so
add
if you'd like to add
list?
This to that discussion, we can
yes,
certainly do
I
that.
I think that would be good if the council is all right with that.
We can still adopt this tonight and then just whatever the next
the
time
list.
We do.
A living okay. document.
Right. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just like the art plan.
Thank you. Other comments? All right. It was moved by Councilmember Asher and seconded by Deputy Mayor Arnold to approve Resolution 5201. Would you call the roll, please? No, it's a resolution. All those in favor, you please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Thank you very much. The motion is approved. So we're moving on to council reports. I think we'll just go down the line and see if anyone has anything to report out of their committee or regionally. Mr. Nixon?
Just to mention that there was an SCA PIC meeting last Wednesday. The report's in your email.
Your notes are great. Thank you.
Thanks.
But actually, the SCA staff really like your notes.
Yeah.
Ms. Kloba.
Yes.
Okay, so the Parks, Public Works, and Human Services Committee met on July 6th. We did add to our regular agenda the item that we'd spoken of among ourselves of regarding free speech activities in parks and public places when they're reserved for community events. So that will be something that will eventually come back around. I think that was a Councilmember Nixon request. And then the other part, we had a presentation from the Community Foundation, so it was the request of council to have this committee take a look at a presentation from the Chamber of Commerce and the Parks Foundation on funding a $40,000 feasibility study to evaluate the potential for a Kirkland Community Foundation. So their proposal to us was for the city to invest $30,000 with the Parks Foundation and the business community raising the remaining $10,000. So it would be a $40,000 altogether. And the committee supports the feasibility study, making sure that it includes a clear scope of work and it is procured through an RFP process. So the committee is recommending that the full council authorize the city manager to bring a funding proposal for the $30,000 from council contingency to the August 16th council meeting for possible action. And I think, didn't we already talk, do we have a second meeting in August?
Just one.
So
That is the one meeting in August.
That is our one, okay. Yeah, sorry about that. So that would be to our August 16th council meeting. And then there was some other piece of that. We have not heard a status update on whether or not or how close the Parks Foundation business community are at getting their target. But I think we had I would also propose that we get a report on their progress before we add our $30,000 mm-hmm. in.
Thank you very much. Anything else to add to your report?
So,
that's all I have on that. Thank you. Mr. Asher.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Madam Mayor.
So yes, sir.
We just need to know whether or not the full council would like us to bring that back to the August 16th council meeting per the recommendation of the committee.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Okay, thank you.
I've begun a round of consultations with several King County council members on what I've been trying to get the staff for the mid-committee to grasp and have been unsuccessful, and I've been getting a pretty good reception. I've talked with Councilmember Cole Wells and also with Councilmember Balducci, and we'll probably go to Rod Dembowski next. And you'll see this at the Regional Policy Committee, and you'll also see it at the PIC meeting for Sound Cities Association as we take in the mid-2 reauthorization. I've asked 6 questions, and I'm trying to determine if we can carve out, at least out of mid or set up some kind of glide slope, some money for evaluation of some potentially overlapping areas. We've got 3 special levies, plus we've got a number of pots of money coming in from the state and also from the county. We have the MID, the Mental Illness Drug Dependency. We've got the Best Starts for Kids, and we've got the Veterans and Human Services levies, which are all have the potential of overlapping in a number of ways. So the 6 questions that I've asked to see if we can carve out some money to begin to explore, because I think it's larger than any particular staff on one of these committees. It's the first question is in each of our areas of responsibility for these and this human services, and really it's a criminal justice areas too. What's the unmet need compared to the total need? We don't know that. We don't know what the universe is. But we've got some really fine folks here in at the University of Washington and School of Public Health or in social work that can help us determine that. Once we know the total need and the unmet need, then my second question is, what's currently being done in each of these areas of responsibility by MID, by other funding sources? So what actions are being taken across the spectrum of these? The next question is, what is MID's responsibility compared to the other funding sources, and why? I think we need to answer that kind of question. You know, what are we doing here, and why are we special? What should we be doing? The fourth question is, what is or are the most effective tools to address the unmet need? And how do we know the effectiveness of each of the tools? Essentially, that's a results basis analysis. The fifth question is, how much fund balance is too much? That can't wait, because what we've had to do, at least in the MID committee, I don't know if it's done in the other committees, as soon as they accumulate a fund balance, they go look for a way of spending it immediately. They have no plan to say, okay, we can do some things at the end of the year or things like this. Every quarter they come up with a new forecast and they go, oh, we've got to go spend this money. And we don't ever have enough time to analyze what we should be spending the money for. It's who's out there that wants money. And then the final question is, given the above information, where's the most effective use of the next available dollar that we have to invest in the populations that we serve? These, I think, are key questions that we ought to be asking at a system level. Mm-hmm. I don't think that the staff of any particular initiative or any particular funding source is going to try to go outside of what they've got. But I think the council members are open to doing it. They don't know how quickly they can move the organizational inertia to make this happen. And I told them, I said, I don't think we need to worry about immediate timing or getting it done in the near term. But I would love to see us begin to ask these questions and to have this kind of investigation. So stand by. Maybe we'll have some success in these areas.
Could you share those with us?
Yeah, I was going to ask
sure,
the same thing.
Sure,
could you?
I'll send them out to you. Thanks.
Thank you. Ms. Sweet.
My next. You know, I don't think I've really done anything. I was lucky enough that they canceled Region Water Quality and MISWAC the week of the 4th of July, so I just sort of took it off.
Mr. Arnold.
Well, two notes. Some scheduling changes, because we actually are starting to have the occasional public at our open committee meetings. The Finance and Administration Committee is having a special meeting this Friday, June 22nd, and the Planning and Economic Development Committee will have a special meeting on Monday, August 13th. The Friday meeting is 10 a.m. The Monday, August 15th meeting is 3 p.m.
Thank you. Actually, Jay, is it? Yeah, it is. 15.
I think those are great questions, and it is hard to get to that because, yeah. You know, they say, well, the outputs, the end result is so affected by so many things, criminal justice reform. How do you know which actions you took changed the results? And so, yeah. But I don't think that makes the work any less important.
Yeah.
So, anyway, those are good questions. And when we have these individual initiatives, how are they working together? The Youth exactly. Action Plan and Best Starts and Veterans and Mental Health, they do... They're very they cross-pollinate and need to talk to each other, so thank you. And I am not going to add a regional report. I did attend the Regional Policy Committee, and you probably saw that the MID discussion was postponed because mm-hmm. the meeting was taken up with Best Starts for Kids.
Madam Mayor.
Yes,
ma'am. I recall that I did have something. I don't know if you guys... So with respect to the King County Board of Health... There was a discussion that was going on about the on-site sewage systems, septic systems, and whether mm-hmm. or not there should be some
changes made in the policy, and that has been put on hold. There was quite a lot of community input and a fair bit of misunderstanding of what the policy was going to be, and so that our director of public health is not going to be at the next meeting, which is Thursday, so that's on hold. So the only real meaningful thing, or no, I shouldn't say meaningful thing, action-y type item is a resolution calling for meaningful actions to address lead poisoning and support for efforts to eliminate lead poisoning in King County. And then we're going to have a briefing on gun violence prevention program and the public health approaches to firearm suicide prevention. So that should be very interesting, but I think not a lot of controversy on our agenda for this week.
Thank you very much. I did attend the I-405 Executive Advisory Group this week and was ably staffed by Joel. He's excellent. Mr. Vont is a great addition to our team, and we're lucky to have him. There were a series of briefings and not a whole lot of conversation, but there's some big plans ahead. And I did attend the Uncorked event, which was packed and had a lot going on, and it was really a very a lovely event. And I also wanted to say that I attended with a few of us, Councilmember Marcioni, Mr. Nixon, and Councilmember Sweet, the opening of our new ballot box at City Hall, which I think is kind of almost a sentimental favorite, right, to drop your ballot. So that was a great event. So,
and don't forget Waverly Park.
And Waverly Park, that's right. Yeah, which it's great fabulous. Thanks to the Parks Foundation and Rotary for building us a beautiful new shelter. And the park is looking incredible.
It really is.
City manager's report.
Okay, thank you, Mayor. So I have two quick things to update you on. So speaking of the cross-Kirkland corridor today, Kari Page and Lori McKay and I had the opportunity to drive the entire board of the Recreation Conservation Office from the governor's office down the entire corridor. They had contributed $500,000 to the purchase of the corridor, and they had an all-day visit for all of the things that they'd funded on the east side, so they were going all over the place. And so we put them in our grant facilitation vehicle and drove them down the corridor, and they were just delighted with the corridor. We actually fed them dinner or lunch at the Kirkland Justice Center, but I got to sit next to the chair of the commission the whole time and talk, and I think we made a real huge impression. Everywhere we stopped to talk, people would come up to us and say, "What is this?" And I'd say, "Well, these people helped fund the corridor," and people would say, "This is the best thing that's ever been done. We're so grateful," and just kept giving ideas about how to make it better. And so in the end, they were like, "Well, you know, if you have other grants that you guys are interested in, you should really talk to us about this." So as you know, we have a few that we'll be talking about, particularly the Totem Lake Parks. It was a really positive meeting. They spent an hour and a half with us, and they all went away feeling very good about Kirkland and very good about the state investment in the corridor. So hopefully that will pay good dividends in the future. But it was a great event. Then right after, on the same day, we actually had a meeting that included Lori McKay and Joel Funt with two of the folks from the Secretary of Transportation's office about making the Kingsgate Park and Ride a transit-oriented development. So there is an office in there. We had been having conversations with the previous secretary, and then obviously that was changed. And so we were restarting the conversation, so they came out, and we took them to South Kirkland Park and Ride to show them what could be done, and then we took them up to the Kingsgate Park and Ride. And so they were very enthusiastic about its potential. They said they wanted to help in any way they could, and that they would be trying to put together a meeting in September with us and Sound Transit in King County to talk about ways we could begin to advance a transit-oriented development up at the Kingsgate Park and Ride. So two very positive meetings that just happened last week, so I want to make sure you knew about those. That takes us to the calendar. So are there any changes? You don't have to come to August 2nd council meeting, only the August 16th council meeting. So is there any other calendar changes the council would like to see for the next couple months?
Mr. Asher?
Question, how are we going to handle the night out?
Mm-hmm.
That probably could merit some coordination.
Yeah, so when we have all the final
neighborhood application stuff, we'll send out the calendar to all the council members so you can see who's having what, and you can usually you talk amongst yourselves about how you want to divvy that up, but
okay.
The city manager's office can help with that as well, but Kari okay. will be getting that out to you as soon as we have it all nailed down.
Cool, thanks.
And that is Tuesday, August 2nd. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anything else? That's all I have. I don't know.
This will be my last opportunity to highlight the fact that our city manager has graciously agreed to appear in Studio E's feature summer presentation of The Wizard of Oz. He and our former mayor, Joan McBride, will be members of the Lollipop Guild. Not to be missed, I expect. It'll be an incredible performance. And I believe, because we have passed 10 o'clock, we have no more time in our meeting for further comment. And we are going to be adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone, for a lot of work.
Thank you, Madam Mayor of London.